You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Grassroots, solar-powered, community, open-source radio, all those good things.
Indeed.
And this is Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and wonderful mom, Caroline Kilborn.
Hello, everyone. Sun's trying to shine. Beautiful day.
For January, not too bad.
Not too bad.
Not too bad. Someone called me the other day from Texas, and they're like, so, you know, how is it really cold up there? I said, you know, the sun is shining. I don't really notice the cold when the sun
is
shining.
No, you don't. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
And I wanted to mention, Mom, that someone approached me this past week to talk about when they listen in, when they happen to catch Writer's Voices, how much they appreciate our relationship.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
They said, you know, this is a very rare thing to have.
It is.
Yeah. It is.
Well, you know, I was fortunate. I had a really good relationship with my mother, and she did with her mother as well, and with her mother-in-law. So, you know, it kind of comes down.
Yeah.
Comes down through the ages.
Yeah, and in fact, we're going to talk a little bit about some of that, some of the forebearers, foremothers.
Yeah, foremothers. And you have a good relationship with your daughter. So.
I do. I have a wonderful relationship with my daughter.
Great.
Now, this today is
a little different.
Is the show that almost didn't happen. Originally, we had scheduled Paul Helfrich as our guest today, and that was scheduled for weeks, sometime in December, I think we scheduled it. Paul is the author of Seth, the Ultimate Guide, and he has pulled together all of the different writings of Seth, who, for those of you who aren't familiar with, is a channeled being who spoke through, I can't remember the name of the lady, Bruce, do
Janice
you know?
Or Jane Roberts?
Yes,
Jane Roberts.
Jane Roberts. And there's like 40-some books of things that Seth spoke, and he compiled that into sort of a summary of the most important topics. But, unfortunately, he's run into some difficulties with copyright issues on the material and is unable to publish his book, which is already published, but so he had to back out of the interview today. And then,
wow.
And we were working through his wonderful publicist, Inspiring Promotions, and she offered a backup who was a gentleman by the name of Brent Marchant, who was the author of Get the Picture, Conscious Creation Goes to the Movies. And he's a movie critic, publishes fairly widely, and talks about how the laws of attraction and conscious creation are found in various movies. And when I saw, when I started reading about Brent, the first thing I thought was, Bruce. The first thing I thought of was Bruce. Bruce should know this guy. Bruce should talk to this guy. And so I invited our own KRUU filmosopher to join us today on Writer's Voices.
And I'm honored that you did.
Well, welcome, Bruce.
This is one of my favorite shows. You, as I've told you many times in my life, ostensibly you're about writers, but it's really an inspiring, uplifting, very spiritual show for me. And I would have loved to have heard about Seth. I know that Seth was the first sort of, some people use the word focusing because channeling has a bad word.
Mm.
Esther and Jerry Hicks were turned on and went to see Jane Roberts live. And that was the first they learned about that sort of work in the first place. And she goes on to channel or focus Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I first heard about Seth and learning about Abraham and Jerry and Esther Hicks. So that's something I'm very interested in. There's
Gloria Wendroff, yes, she was a guest on Writer's Voices.
I figured she was,
yes.
And she does Heaven Letters every day. And one of the great quotes out of that is it preposterous to think that God speaks through us, or any being like that? Maybe it's preposterous to think that God doesn't speak through all of us. That's the preposterousness.
When
you look at it that way.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we all, because we're all connected to the same source, can do that, and that's what people say.
Well, we think, you know, many, many people believe that God spoke through people who lived in Old Testament times and then all of a sudden stopped.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's right. It's like when Jesus healed and then no more healings. Sorry, but it's still going on.
Yes, yeah. Now, Caroline, you had a chance to read a little bit of the Seth book, and this was your first exposure to it.
Yeah, it was.
And I know you had a little unusual from perspective.
It's unusual, yes. But it was interesting. And I firmly believe, I mean, I know that, for instance, when your dad died, I was young, and I had a child at home.
Right.
And I needed help, and he helped me. He actually spoke to me at different times. And so I absolutely know if you are open to that, it can happen.
Well,
but you have to be
maybe
open
I'll
to
have
it.
To ask That's you later what he said. I don't know.
Well, I can tell you the first thing, remember he had the office in the one bedroom?
Mm-hmm.
And so after things calmed down a little bit, after Grandma and Lucille left, I went in there.
Because his death was very unexpected.
Yes.
And he was only 49.
And he died at the Grand Canyon. So he was, all these, he had this truck patch at the farm, and at our farm in Davis County, and all these little notes were on his desk of things he wanted to do, planned to do. And I sat down, I said, how am I ever going to do that? All these things. And he said, don't worry about it, those were my plans.
Wow.
I love that. I had the same experience when my wife passed. I don't hear voices. It was a feeling for me. I was specifically looking for Forrest and Shane's Social Security cards, and I didn't know where they were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my sister-in-law was up from St. Louis and trying to get things going, and I'm sitting in front of the computer. I said, Joe, where is it? And I had this warm feeling right in my heart, and my attention went right to the closet where we have this file cabinet hidden behind a suitcase that I'd forgotten all about. Oh, yes, that's where it is. And that's just the beginning of many events like that.
Yeah. Well, she was speaking to you through your subconscious. Yeah.
Right. I had a feeling. I don't really hear the voicing, but I get these things through my heart. And I had this feeling the attention went right over there. And that was one of many events.
I got a message from Dad through a dream.
Did you?
I did. And I don't tend to remember. There are very few dreams that I remember very long. Sometimes I'll remember them long enough to tell somebody, but then it completely disappears. But
it's frustrating sometimes.
Yeah, yes. Yes. But this dream is one that I've always remembered. And we were walking on the farm in Pennsylvania, his parents' property.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful country estate kind of thing. We were walking up towards the North Hill, which is... this was really kind of an ideal place as a child. There was this big house, and then there was these pastures and gardens all around, and then there was the North Hill, which was covered with woods, and the East Hill that was covered with woods, and on the west there was a creek that we played in,
and then
you had to go across the road to the South Hill, so we didn't go there by ourselves too much, but we played up on the North Hill a lot. We played Army and, you know, things like that.
And there was a kiln.
There was a lime kiln in there built into the side of the hill that we used to play. And it's amazing, some of the things, I'm not even going to tell you some of the things we did. It's
no,
amazing
I
we
think
survived,
that's not.
But anyway, because I was the middle, I mean, there were five of us children, but there were three of us that were very close in age, and I had an older brother, a year older, myself, and a brother a year younger, or about a year and a half in each case. So the three of us were little terrors, I'm sure. But anyway, so I had this dream where I'm walking with Dad, and it wasn't too long after he had passed away, and I asked him what it was like on the other side, and he told me that he's and somewhere recently I saw this someone else saying almost the same thing, and I think it might have been in that Epiphany book that we had on the show just
that was a
couple
great
weeks
show.
Ago. I loved that book. It's wonderful. Yeah. Anyway, what he said was the problems aren't all solved. People still have important work to do, but nobody fights about God anymore. because everyone knows God.
Because everybody's there with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
wow,
it wasn't.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
That's what it's like on the other side is what he's saying.
That's what he was saying. That it's not like you're floating around playing a harp. You know, it's like there's still challenges, things to learn, ways to grow. But it's so much better because we don't have the arguments about religion.
So, because everybody realizes that there is a source, which we can call God or a source or many names for it.
Yeah.
And we're beginning to relearn that here in the physical form. But there it's obvious. And so that really makes sense,
which
truth does. And that's, you have repeatedly had people on that have had profound influence in my life. Amaji, who's a blonde girl?
Gangaji.
Yeah. I can still remember sitting at home after listening, and you asked her, is there anything else you'd like to say? She said, remember, they're just thoughts. And that was one of the many things that I've remembered. You know, almost every thought that we have is a limiting belief that takes us away from that awareness that we're all unity. Almost every thought just about it. And she's remembered they're just thoughts. And that knowledge is coming out all over the place now about thoughts and, you know, getting out of the mind and into the heart. There's a lot of expansion. Because that's where they say where the connection is like my feeling for my wife.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's really...
So anyway, for anyone who tuned in today to hear Brent Marchand,
it isn't going to happen.
We had a little miscommunication, and we weren't able. We will have him on at a later date. He does want to do the show. It just didn't happen today.
Wasn't able.
And so we decided to have our wonderful co-host Bruce Miller, and we're just going to talk about.
Things
about movies, about writing, about and obviously about some other things.
Yeah, right.
So Bruce, tell us a little bit about your involvement with film.
Just have been a film fan all my life. I remember when we moved from Greenville, South Carolina to St. Louis, Missouri, which where my family's been since 1959. I can remember my mom saying, there's a lot of movie theaters in St. Louis. I can still remember that. One of the things I did every Saturday is I went to the movies Saturday afternoon. That was a staple in my life, and
so
I loved it.
So did I when I was growing up.
And then I got involved in the radio business over at KMCD and Kick 96, different name now, and we started we were always talking about things that we liked, and Jay Mitchell, who was the one of the owners of the station, said, let's have entertainment talk. It was a local show, and we started talking about movies, mostly about movies, because that's what we loved, entertainment talk. And Chris Bush started his show, my co-host on the Filmosophers, and that was called The Flick Pickers with his co-host.
Oh, that's a cute name.
And that was, so we were doing, I was doing entertainment talk, he was doing The Flick Pickers, and then his co-host moved to Colorado. Entertainment talk stopped. They, you know, you're changing programs like you do
Close.
A menu or a menu. They try to make it fresh, is where you look at, like you do a restaurant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the Flick Pickers was still going on, so Chris asked me to join him in that. And so it's been 10, 15 years that I've been talking about movies on the radio. I was just in the right place at the right time, and it's something that I love. It's just was led into it, and it's a joy to be able to talk about something that you enjoy, and it gives you a reason to watch films or read books like you all do, which is a wonderful thing.
I had to buy a new bookshelf for the books that I've gotten for the show.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful? And there's so many wonderful, that the folks that you pick out, I don't want to go back to books, but I just, you know, I'm not really a writer's voice, is not into the writing. It is the people that you have on that are just amazing, and it's very transformative. And I have so many aha experiences listening to your guests. I've become friends with them. I mentioned the guy who wrote The Buddha's Brain.
Mm-hmm.
I signed up for his newsletter. And there are other people. Oh, Carol Fitzpatrick has had a major. She did a reading for me that had a profound effect on my life. She nailed my kids, and not her, but she channeled higher energy, which is what she does. And she started talking about my oldest son Forrest like they knew him exactly, and it was mind-blowing. And I had the CD, and I was driving to Iowa City to go see The King's Speech, which I think is going to be the best picture, and I'm crying in the car because of hearing about my kids described the way that I know them. And It's amazing. And this is somebody that I learned about on your show. She's talking about the changes of the earth. And it turns out her husband, Mark Torgerson, is a musician. And I've had them on my radio show, my music show, Saturday mornings, Pirate Satellite, twice.
Wow.
And we played his music. And he does sings. He plays while she's doing her work. He plays the keyboards and he just flows this music.
Mm.
Just flows it. You know, he's not writing it. It's just, it's wow. Like all good art, as you both know, you tap into the source and it just flows.
Mm-hmm.
That's how KRU came to be. There was so much creativity here that needed to be expressed. This portal of creativity happened.
Oh, yeah.
It happened almost overnight. Happened within
yeah.
a week. It's
yeah.
a, the story's amazing.
It yeah. is.
You
talked
to James Moore and the folks that got this started.
And the fact that they had the persistence to stick with it now for almost 5 years, and it's going on 5 years, and it's not easy to launch. I mean, how many new radio stations do you think have launched in the United States in the last 5 years?
There's an amazing amount of facts about this station.
Yeah.
You two are a great example. I mean, what you do with Writers' Voices, and this is the only solar-powered station. We could go on and on. The only solar-powered station in the Midwest.
Right.
And, it's
and
just
the whole open-source aspect. And
completely open-source. Everything that is used here is completely open and free.
Yeah.
You know, all the mm-hmm. programming, the computer programmings.
Yeah.
And so it's because of all of us that have something to say. There's so much creativity that needs to flow. And so that's going back to your show and the guests that you have, it's just amazing for me to be able to experience that. It's really terrific.
I didn't realize that you had worked at KMCD because Caroline worked at KMCD long before you.
I know. You've been in radio for many years. You were in Mount Pleasant. You had a show there, isn't that
right? I'm Burlington.
In Burlington,
yeah,
okay.
I went down to Burlington, yeah. Well, I started in 73 at KMCD. I had a coffee with Carolyn on at 9 o'clock, 9 or 9:30 every morning, 5 days a week, and then I was a disc jockey on Sunday. So that's how I got started. Then when the station sold, I worked there one more year, and then they decided they no longer needed me, and so then I went to work for a print place and wrote column for that. And
the Town Crier.
The Town Crier. And then when they folded.
And she collected all her columns together for us as a Christmas present this year, all the columns she had
written. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then I went. I had been going to school to get my degree because I had 3 years of college, and then I had left school to get married. And so I got my degree, and then I started teaching. So then I had, my husband.
And teaching English.
Teaching English, yeah.
So there's a connection with writing all through this.
Right, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I have had a really good life. I mean, I have lost two husbands, but I have fantastic children and grandchildren and friends, and I have a beautiful home that my son bought me, and I just, oh gosh.
That attitude is what is creating a wonderful life for you. That attitude that you have a wonderful life, because that is what we're doing. And that's one of the things that Brent Marchand talks about in his reviews about, what our beliefs are. We are conscious creators, and that's what the way he describes it,
mm-hmm.
or deliberate creators. And the attitude that we have, we absolutely create our own lives. And so when you say that, you're creating that. That's why you're feeling so good, is that
mm-hmm.
that idea that you've had a wonderful life. And
yeah.
even though you've had some death, death is actually...
It's part of life.
And it's also, we could open a whole can of beans about, because, there would be people that tell you there's no such thing as death. You've both experienced your husband and your dad after he left that body. I've done the same with my wife and my sister also.
But you still feel a presence.
And what I see it as, because there's only one of us here, there's only one source, nothing happens to us, it happens for us.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the way I look at I've had some tragedy in my life, it has helped me not identify so much with what's happening around me, but to identify with that inner self, that non-physical inner self. And that's where you have to get all of the thinking out of the way, get into the heart, because we're not our thoughts. remember, it's just a thought.
Yeah.
And so that's really
amazing.
But our thoughts are very powerful.
Oh,
well,
they can.
And so that's why what you're saying.
Yeah, our thoughts can lead us, lead us to destruction because you're thinking, action. And that's what happens to people. They overthink and then they do things that they wouldn't do ordinarily if they hadn't been so.
Well, I've read in many different places and experienced it too, the importance, you're saying, the attitude of gratitude and how important that is. And so it tickled me to no end that my 1-year-old grandson, that his first word, his mother was born in Taiwan. She's been in the United States since she was 2, but her mother still speaks Chinese. So and she takes care of Logan. And so his first word was dog in Chinese. His second word was dog in English. Then he got mama and dada. But after those very important people in his family, his first words were, thank you.
Wow. That is
wonderful. And every time he would give you something, he would say, thank you.
That's wonderful. That is so wonderful. That reminds me of Jessica and Ken Malloy's 3-year-old daughter, Mira, who, well, I'm over at Thanksgiving, and here's Ken's changing her diaper, and I said, you are so cute. She goes, thank you. You just don't hear that at that age, but here Logan and Mira, you're going, wow, this is very special, because gratitude is one of the most powerful attitudes that we can, that's what you were expressing.
Yeah.
So that's a great story. It reminded me of Mira.
And he's the happiest baby I've ever seen.
He's always known. Yeah. I don't think I saw him fuss one time when I was around him.
I know. I was there for one time for a week and heard him cry a couple of times. Now, as he got older, he got a little more, you know, if things didn't go his way, you know, more assertive. But, you know, as an infant, he hardly ever cried. And he's and very easy to comfort. And we really lucked out with that one.
Yeah.
I feel the same way with Shane and Forrest. It's such a blessing.
Oh, yeah.
And the kids coming in now also, there's some really extraordinary kids. They want to be here now.
Yeah. So you were talking about going to see The King's Speech.
Yes.
Oh, it's a wonderful movie. I so highly recommend you see this. I believe this will be the Oscar winner for Best Picture of the Year. If you follow the award shows, which I enjoy, by the way, there's the Screen Actors Guild this Sunday night on TNT and TBS.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a Film Critics Award, which The Social Network won for Best Picture.
Okay.
That's about Zuckerberg, the creator of Facebook.
Right.
And then they had the Golden Globes, which is one of the first big ones. And The Social Network also won Best Drama there. And it's gaining some momentum. It is a well-made film, extremely well-made. But The King's Speech is well-made and gloriously, emotionally satisfying. And one of the reasons that I think that it'll win for Best Picture is because it has a themes that the Oscar voters like. It's about royalty.
I was going to say, it's historically important.
It is true. It's true, first off. It is historically very important, and it's about royalty, and it's about overcoming great adversity.
Uh-huh.
And here, you know, we all know about the king who abdicated to marry the gal from Baltimore.
Right.
Wallace Simpson.
Yeah. And so his younger brother is next in line, and he stutters. He stammers, as they say.
He never dreamed he would be king.
He didn't want to be.
No, he didn't want to be king.
And his wife, played by Helena Bonham Carter, asked one of these great elocutionist experts who, you know, they've tried everybody to help him. And she's led to this fellow from Australia who's played by Jeffrey Rush, and he's quite different and very unusual. And it's about their relationship and how his name is Lionel Logue, and how he works with the king on unusual levels. And you really connect with both of these actors and both of the people that they are, and specifically Colin Firth. You feel right from the beginning, because they show a true event to where he's talking to. It's when England had a lot of colonies and they oversaw like a quarter of the world.
Yeah.
And so he's talking to a quarter of the world and he's stammering, and you feel for him. And Colin Firth plays this so well. And you really feel for him and care for him. And Jeffrey Rush also plays this speech therapist so well, and how he brings out, they're usually just working on mechanics, but there are obviously emotional problems, and you learn about it as Lionel Logue, Jeffrey Rush's character, brings it out of Colin Firth, and mm-hmm. whereas all the other
essentially it's like a psychotherapy aspect.
Right, it's not just the mechanics of talking. It's but that you learn that from Louise Hay. She wrote the book about why you look up all the things that are wrong with you, and she gives you the underlying emotional reason. This is where he works on that. Lionel works on that level, and you just grow and you care about these characters, and you go through it, and it's so beautiful to see these where they are and all these royal places, and the ending, the king's speech that he has to give when they're going into World War One, and like you said, Caroline, it's a very important time of the year because it's right into World War Two. I mean, you've got Germany is overtaking everybody, and you need the king to rally the country.
Right.
And there's a scene in the movie where they're showing Hitler, and one of the kids asks him, "Daddy, what's he saying?" Because he's speaking in German. He says, "I don't know, but he's saying it very well." And that's one of the things that Hitler did really well.
Oh, Hitler was.
He was so.
Oh, yeah.
And this is one thing that the King of England did not do well, Colin Firth's character. He didn't even want to be there, as you said earlier. Yeah. And so how they evolving get into this.
You have a story you've told me about a professor of yours.
Oh, yeah,
heard
I was just
going to
tell
speech.
That. When I was at the University of Iowa, Dr. Mossy, who was the head of history department, would lecture, and then we would have the discussion groups, you know. And he was a German Jew, and he said that Hitler was so powerful that he said, "I was in the crowd, and they were screaming, 'Kill the Jews,' and I'm screaming, 'Kill the Jews,' and it's not because I'm afraid that they, you know, to not do it." He said, "I'm doing it because he's so powerful."
That's a great story. I was watching Joseph Campbell. He was talking about the power of this that Hitler did, as you're talking about, and he's talking about a story of where he knew somebody that was in a camp, a Jewish guy. Was in one of these Holocaust-type camps, and whenever Hitler would come to speak, they'd all have to stand outside and stand at attention. And he said, this guy told Joseph Campbell, "It was all I could do not to raise my arm and go, 'Heil Hitler.'"
Yeah.
Even though he's in this camp and he's a prisoner. That's how powerful it was. It was all I could do not to raise my hand.
I wonder if anyone has ever done a study of what, or really explained how Hitler gained that personal power.
That's a really interesting thing that you bring up, The Triumph of the Will, which is a film that I've got on my Netflix queue, because Shane is really getting into history, and we'll watch this together, and being film fans and fans of history like that. But you know, it taps into the emotions. It's not the brain. It's not the brain. It's the emotions. That's where the power is.
Yeah, because nobody
what's so
in their right mind would have agreed with
right,
him.
Exactly. Nobody in their right mind would go with that.
Well, the History Channel just had the rise of the Third Reich and the fall of the Third Reich. And I watched it, and it was amazing. It was interesting. It was very interesting. And I want to tell you about this play that I saw on Iowa Public Television. The Jews in the concentration camp put God on trial. You can understand why, as a chosen people, they were very upset. Okay, so
yeah, if this was what it means to be chosen.
Right. We don't think we want this.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was a rabbi that came in that had just been transferred there, and he listened to them for a while, and then he said, "Well, remember this: the war will end, and Hitler will die. And we still have the Torah, and we are still a people."
That's wonderful. And when you talked about that, I'm thinking the Jews as a group going through this terrible thing is like the terrible tragedies that we go through individually.
Mm-hmm.
And they are there to help us let go of identifying with these things that are happening and realize that underneath we are complete, and it doesn't really matter what happens out there. So much of, or maybe as a group, that's what they went through, as a group consciousness sort of thing that we go through individually. And this is one of the things that Brent Marchant, who this movie reviewer we're going to have on today, he talks about the rabbit hole. Are you familiar with that? Nicole Kidman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
what's it about?
It's about she and her husband, and I'm kind of spacing on who's starring in that, lose a child. They lose a child, the death of a child. It's got to be the worst thing that can happen to a family,
except
for maybe kids losing their mom.
Yeah.
That's right up
That's right up there.
Which is worse. Yeah. Let's have it done. But he talks about going through this, and in the movie, I wish I had the review, you know, I made it. He talks about how... No, that's okay. It would have to be... That they look... They learn a little bit through Fred Wolf, who was in What the Bleep Do We Know. They learn a little bit about who we really are, and that not to... We can become a whole person and allow these things to help us grow as human beings, these tragedies. Mm-hmm. And he talks about that in this movie, Rabbit Hole, and he says, unfortunately, they only just skip on it, and they go to more cliche-type things. Mm. But it's an idea of... You get a glimpse that nothing happens to us, it happens for us. And for me, the way I understand that is because there's only one of us here. There's only one of us. There's all these human beings, but it's all from one source. And so there's nobody on the outside doing anything to us. It's God having all these experiences. And we all, as Brent writes in his review of The Rabbit Hole, and he also writes it in Black Swan. And he's changed my mind about seeing some of these movies that I might not want to go through. I walked out of Black Swan. He's sort of changed my mind because...
So would you go back now and see?
Yeah, I'm thinking about going back now and prepare myself for all the bad things that she's going through, because she goes into the hole and comes out liberated. Mm. And we all have these tough times. And like you said, remember, Hitler will die, things will change, we still have the Torah. Mm. And they do in this world, the relative world, these things will change and we'll still be here. And we can come out more expansive than ever.
One thing, when things are like not going my way, part of how I keep a positive outlook about it is I always think, oh, this is going to make a great story later.
That's great. That's seeing the big picture. You're rising above it and looking at the story or the play like you were talking
about. I'm going to be able to eat dinner on this a few times.
Talk about it to your friends.
Right.
Part of your book. Yeah. Part of the columns that you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah. That's a wonderful thing. That's looking, you know, at the big picture. That's a perspective. That's wonderful.
So was The Rabbit Hole one of the movies that you were avoiding and that you might change your mind about now?
I started to when he started writing about that, especially the he mentioned What the Bleep Do We Know, and Fred Allen Wolf, who's a physicist, in this review, and we'll talk about it more
when we get
I can
him
be
on.
With you. Yeah. I'd love to be with you on that.
Definitely.
And but he says in the film they skip over it. They go back to the old cliche formulaic emotional things. And as I'm reading this review that he's writing about this film, I'm thinking that's probably because it's so esoteric that it's even good that they mentioned it just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Get mentioned a little bit. It means it's creeping in.
Yeah.
You know, these old things about losing loved ones, it's just so formulaic over and over and over again. The fact that there's a little bit in the rabbit hole is a good thing.
Right.
A start. It's moving in the right direction. Somebody told me they didn't like The Secret because they felt it was so surface level and making more money. But I loved it because to me it sets the right angle. It's moving toward the truth. It's setting the right angle. And a little bit of attention on that. Emily Dickinson said, "The truth dazzles gradually. Otherwise, we'd all go blind."
Oh, great.
You got to write that quote down.
Yeah,
Mom.
I got to write that. Right.
I got that from What the Bleep Do We Know website. I've got that bookmark on whenever I want to find a quote, and that's one of them. The truth dazzles gradually, otherwise we'd all go blind.
Right.
And it's really true. You know, I can feel these layers peeling away. You know, I've gone through things, but now there's so much light coming out, really assisted by writers' voices. I have really, I mean, direct result of your show, I had a wonderful experience with Carol Fitzpatrick, and they've come here twice. They have this thing in Fredericksburg, Virginia, a very enlightened type society, and they've connected with Fairfield and they've done some things.
Another movie that's in the forefront is True Grit, and I don't see how but I don't see how you could possibly do better than John Wayne did before. I mean, I loved that piece.
Have you seen the new one?
No, I haven't. I don't think I want to see it because I just of course, I'm a John Wayne fan anyway. So
that's a great point. Randy West, who is the executive and creative director of Way Off Broadway, and we're so grateful to have him in this community. Mm-hmm. He feels the same way. He's a big John Wayne fan. He saw the new one, and he said, "I like it until the third act, And so you probably will not like it as much. It is, though. The new one is marvelous. It has a wonderful film. I went in. I like John Wayne, too. In fact, my son Shane, my 11-year-old, shares my affinity for movies, and we went on these older kicks, and we almost did like a retrospective of John Wayne films last summer, and it was so great. The Alamo, I hadn't seen that for years.
Oh, yeah, that's a great piece.
The Searcher, he won the Oscar. He won
The
Oscar for True Grit. That was his one Oscar. He is so much better in The Searchers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's just almost just...
Yeah.
After watching, we watched True Grit, and we watched him in True Grit, but then you watch The Searcher. He is... spectacular in that film. That is a great film. That was like George Lucas's favorite film.
I can
The
see
Searchers.
Why.
If you haven't seen that, that's highly recommended. So,
yeah.
Well, I haven't read the a review of True Grit from the perspective of conscious creation, but if I would predict what it would say, certainly the young girl, I can't remember her name.
Hailee Steinfeld, wonderful.
Well, and her character's name.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah. So the character of the young girl. She creates the whole thing.
She narrates the story,
but she creates everything that happens just by her own passionate belief in what she's doing.
Her will. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And belief is
a
key word too.
Yeah, and she's able to do pretty amazing things for a 14-year-old because she believes that she can.
Did you see it? Have you seen it?
I have seen it. Yes.
What'd you think?
Yeah, I really liked it. There were some aspects of it that I was a little iffy about. Some things that didn't fit quite for me. For example, I mean, here you've got this girl who has so much personal power, really, for a 14-year-old girl.
Very intelligent.
Very
does
intelligent.
The books for him.
Very, she basically. Faces down this business person and negotiates a refund on what her father had, and she
it's amazing.
Amazing. And her mother, who never actually shows in the film, is portrayed as this like weak person who is totally, that the girl has to take care of everything. Well, I find it really hard to believe that someone who has a mother who is not competent and capable would be able to develop that self-esteem, just in our society. And in that time period, for a girl to have that ability and power is pretty rare.
Yeah, and daddy's going, she couldn't get it from daddy?
Well, she could have partially, but...
Well, maybe she ran the family before her father was killed.
Yeah.
There's a lot more than that, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's certainly a lot more than
what
that.
What our influences are and what we come in to do. And
but I just felt that that was sort of glossed over about what created her ability to do this.
That reminds me of Winter's Bone. Did you see Winter's Bone?
I did, yeah.
Same thing, right?
Same thing, yes.
And both her mom and her dad...
Yeah.
You know about the dad. Mom's also. So did you not question how did? She,
now that's interesting.
Isn't
I didn't
that
question
interesting?
It as much then because it's modern times, and so there's more female sort of
empowerment going on.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah, so there was.
Did
that.
You like that movie? You recommend Winter's Bone?
I do. Yeah, I would recommend it. Yeah,
it's Jennifer Lawrence.
Intense.
I think her name is
it's
the actress.
Very intense. I watched it on an airplane, so it was a very small screen. Which probably is good for that. I don't know if I'd want to see that on a big screen.
It gets intense. It came to the co-ed, and that's one of the 10 films listed for best movie of the year.
Wow.
It made it there. Some people thought it was like it was going to be between that and another film I forget. But
by the way, you're listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. This is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is filmographer Bruce Miller, and we're discussing a wide variety of topics today.
Hey, I'd like to encourage everyone to think about writing some memoir of their childhood or early marriage or whatever you want to do. I find that extremely rewarding, and once you start, all these memories come back that you hadn't thought about for years, things that happened to you, with you and your brothers and sisters or you and your parents or friends. And it's really fun.
And it's really fun for your children to have that.
I hope so, because that's what they got for Christmas, too.
Yep.
Caroline, how is it rewarding? What is it about it that is fulfilling for you?
Because, you remember these things, and you remember, okay, I got through that time. That was not a great thing that happened, but I got through it. For instance, my brother... My brother and I set fire to a vacant lot one time near our home.
We all have these stories. I'm thinking what I did.
Yeah. That was the worst thing we ever did.
Of course,
did.
My brother set fire to my other brother.
That was the worst thing we ever did. But it was interesting. It was interesting.
Did your mom find out that you did it?
Yeah, she did. And she was just grateful that we weren't hurt. And she didn't, she didn't. And then what, but remember the story about the time I told this kid who was bragging how tough he was, oh, my brother can beat you up. Well, my brother was a 98-pound weakling. I mean, he really was. And so the kid then, when he saw my brother, he said, oh, well, I'm not gonna beat up on you. You're too little. And so it worked out okay. But then on the way home, from the swimming pool, on the way home, my brother said, well, we won't tell Mother about this. Gratefully.
And as you're writing about this, you're feeling a joy about this? Or is there some sort of, you realize that everything came out okay in the difficult parts? And
but I never did that again. I never put him in danger again.
And it's also learning.
Yeah, it was a learning experience. Yeah, yeah. And then, but then, as he got in high school, he went out for wrestling, and so he developed quite a physique. But you know, it was still. But that was,
maybe that was partly why.
Maybe it was.
maybe motivated him.
History is replete with short people highly motivated. I mean, Napoleon. You go on and on about.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but you know,
short
people
very motivated.
I just read a statistic in Inc. magazine that. On average, a 6-foot man earns over $5,000 more a year than a 5'5 or 5'6. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Really?
Yeah, 5'6, I think. Yeah. Huh.
And a lot of that is the prejudice.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the animals, they try to make themselves look bigger. Bigger is better right now. That's all changing.
You know, you talk about people that look down on other people. I took care of some sheep for a while. And they were all black face except one white face, and the black face sheep would not let her lie down with them. They would not let her eat at the trough. I had to feed her separately from a bucket. I'm not kidding.
That's
and
amazing.
The buck didn't have any problem with it. She had a lamb, but I found that interesting that they shunned her because she would look different than they did.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That's very interesting.
We tend to think that's just a human thing.
Right. Separation.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think it is.
Discrimination.
Right.
Yeah. Or just the perception of anything separate from yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's changing. Yeah. That's all changing. As I've learned over the years listening to writers' voices.
So, Bruce, how many years have we been doing this?
It's 4.5 almost.
No way.
It was four years
ago
this past October.
And folks can hear the archive show at your site. What's your site address?
writersvoices.com.
Writersvoices.com.
Right. And also at KRUUFM.com. They're both locations. And we have other, little blogs and information and articles about getting published at Writers' Voices, and we're trying to build it into a site with a lot of information for writers.
It's so interesting how the world has changed in the last 5 years, even last 3 years. Even.
Yes, yes, yes. It's going faster and faster, Caroline. It's just really incredible.
Yeah.
You had somebody that the guest who has the progressive website.
Oh,
most progressive website?
Marcos Melitzas, yeah.
Boy, that raised some stuff inside of me because, and I wanted to respond. He talked about how the conservative voices far outnumber the liberal voices.
Yeah.
Many, many, and he felt overwhelmed by that. He felt like, you know, we're fighting against a giant. And I wanted to tell him the answer to that is the light erases much darkness. It takes a little bit of light to erase a lot of darkness, just a little bit of light. Positive thoughts, a little bit of love erases a lot of negativity. You look at Maharishi talking about 0.5%, that's all it takes. That's the answer to his lament. It doesn't take much positive light, doesn't take much light.
Mm-hmm.
So there's how we can feel when you're going, oh gosh, there's so much negativity out there and they're so loud and they're shooting our liberal politicians. And That's also phase transition. That's phase transition. It really is darkest before the dawn, but it just takes a little bit of light. That's what I was going. I'm driving around going, that's the answer, that's the answer. And I was going to email you, and I didn't.
You should call in sometime when you have a comment. When
I will then. Well, yeah. You're already on the phone. That's the thing.
That's true. That makes it a little
But that's a
tricky.
Really, really inspiring show, yeah. The writer's voices. When does that air?
It airs Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. and Monday morning from 8 to 9.
And that's very important.
You know, we have almost 200 interviews available online from the past.
Wow.
That's important because you all, that's when I catch it off. And if I don't, it's Monday mornings at 8. I'm taking my kids to school. Mm-hmm. And so when you're talking about the weather, remember, and for Monday, I don't know how it is Monday. Because a lot of us catch that on Monday morning. It's wonderful Monday morning to be able to catch that.
Yeah.
For those of us that are having,
you know, today is today's anniversary of the space shuttle Challenger that exploded.
Really?
Way back in the 80s. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember that because there was a teacher that was on board, and so I was teaching then at junior high, and so we had it on, you know, on the TV. It was horrible.
McAuliffe, that's
felt
her name?
Christine, yeah.
And we felt so bad because we said, she's one of us, you know. She's one of us.
Yeah.
And, that was just, I thought the horror of that. Oh, my. Yeah.
Well, Bruce, going back to films and film critics, are there any film critics that you read regularly?
That reminds me of wanting to acknowledge Roger Ebert. Do you know what he's gone through?
Yes.
Yeah. Where his show with Gene Siskel, who passed from cancer, they originally started, they were both critics in Chicago. And I was going to ask Brent, is stationed in Chicago, I was going to ask him about how he felt about Roger Ebert.
And they were critics for newspapers.
Rival newspapers, and somebody brought them together. It was a PBS show, and it was called At the Movies. Mm-hmm. And they became Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah.
It was my favorite. I can remember back in 1985, it was my favorite TV show. And one of the reasons, not just because I like films, but because they really didn't get along, so it was fun to watch.
They didn't agree with each other.
They didn't agree with each other.
Very
they
rarely
would get
did they agree.
So
right.
If they both gave it a thumbs up, then that was saying something.
Yes, it was.
It was. I loved it. And so I'm very happy to say that Roger Ebert has a reincarnation now. Gene Siskel passed from cancer, and Roger Ebert's gone through a lot of cancer in the jaw. He lost like his lower jaw is just completely gone now.
But he's got a replacement.
He has a prosthetic.
Okay.
But he talks. He types in what he wants to say.
Does he still write his column?
And he still writes his column. He's got this TV show now. It's Ebert Presents at the Movies.
Ah.
It just started last week. And you look, check PBS. They've got Christy Lemire. I'm not sure if I got the name right. She reviews for the AP. We've had her on the Filmosophers.
Oh, cool.
And then another young fellow who actually do the reviews, and he has like his own little segment from Roger's office. And I'm so happy that he's back on the air. That's one of my influences. But I can't say that there's a specific reviewer that I look toward.
Well, the thing about Ebert's reviews is they are fun to read even if you don't want to go to the movie. He has such a way with words. He's a
great writer, isn't he?
He's a great writer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what I like a lot about Claudia Puig. She reviews for USA Today, and we quote her a lot in the Filmosophers. She writes, she's the word pithy. She knows she really condenses things really well and describes how a movie is in a few amount of words, which I still try to work on. It takes me a long time to write because I just too effusive, and you really need to.
Well,
I spent so much time getting rid of it. Lee Gobble taught me that. Lee Gobble taught me that years ago. Our dear friend Lee Gobble
taught you that.
I was writing a commercial for Gobble's Clothiers, and he was talking about, you know, he used the word pithy. Cut things out, and he was really right about that.
It's not easy to do. And like Mark Twain once wrote a letter to a friend, said, I would have written you a shorter letter, but I didn't have time. So it was quicker to write the long letter,
right,
than to shorten it up and make it make it.
Good point. Hit there. Just let it go instead of spending that time. Yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah, and Mark Twain, of course, is. I don't know if you're aware of this, but they just published the autobiography of Mark Twain
for the first time.
For the first time, because he specifically requested
that
it not be published until I think he requested 100 years after his death, and it isn't 100 years. Or maybe it is.
It's close. If
yeah,
it isn't 100.
I think it is 100 years. Parts of it were published earlier. Some of it not really with the approval of the people who should have had the approval of it. But so I got it on my Kindle, and I've been reading the introduction. I haven't actually got into what he wrote yet. But I just love the way he puts things.
Why is he so revered? What makes him such a great writer?
What makes...
I go through Hannibal on my way to St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
You can't help but learn about him. But I don't know why he's such a great writer. I just know he's revered and respected by everyone.
Well, he's a great storyteller to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And when he broke a lot of boundaries. He wrote about things...
He wrote it like it was.
He wrote it like it was.
Like the African-American...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although if you read it now... You know, when they did the play here last summer, The Big River, and which was the Huck Finn, the story of Huck Finn, and we spoke to some of the African American actors that were in that play, how it felt to play those parts, because even the good people in that were
prejudiced.
Using
prejudiced
words.
Yeah. Even
yeah.
They were, yeah.
The
even
N-word.
That's,
boy.
That's the way it was. That's yeah. The way it was.
Yeah. I mean, you were good because you were kind to your slave. You know, that made you good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what did they say?
They said it was very difficult. It was very challenging. And they said they were with a really good group. And so nobody, like, took those attitudes off the stage into their, you know, because they, these group of interns, they hang out together.
No method acting.
Yeah. But, you know, some of them talked about, you know, they had to call home and talk to their parents and, you know, work through a lot of emotions having to do with that. But Mark Twain himself, he didn't have always an easy life. I mean, he lost a daughter. A young daughter.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and his wife at a fairly young age. And
he lived in the East, didn't he?
He did, in Connecticut, I think.
But you remind me, I want you to finish on why he's a great writer, but J.D. Salinger, who's the great writer?
Mm-hmm. Catcher in the Rye.
There is a brand new documentary, it's a bio on him.
Oh, right.
That talked about he went through a specific battle in World War II where there were like 3,000 soldiers went in and only 500 survived. And he was one of 500, and that he was reclusive because of the great horror that he went through, not because he was a weirdo.
Interesting.
And I'm going, wow, you know, we have these judgments about people,
yeah.
But they go through these things.
Yeah.
You're talking about Mark Twain. I didn't know he lost his wife for that.
And he was, of course, known as a great humorist. And he did. I think the thing that makes him so great is he points out truths in a way that you get to laugh at yourself at the same time you're becoming aware of this truth. And he had such a way of putting things, like one of my favorite, and I don't have the quote exactly, but something about the fact that a lie can make it halfway around the world before the truth has got its shoes tied.
Wow. That's good. And that's a reflection of what? People really like to share...
rumor, innuendo.
Why does rumor go so fast?
You know,
it's really amazing. Now with the internet, it's just amazing.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Have you seen The Social Network?
I haven't seen The Social Network, but before we move on, when you're talking about J.D. Salinger being, you know, having this experience in the war, special friend Paul Gandy and I, this last weekend, watched All Quiet on the Western Front.
Oh,
ooh, that's
boy,
intense,
that's a movie.
Isn't it?
It is. It's very slow moving compared to movies today. And what, looking at it from today's perspective, you would consider it maybe a little corny, but it was a very powerful anti-war message that you would think we would have learned these lessons by now. We haven't.
Yeah, no.
You know, we haven't. But it was very interesting to watch.
Yeah, I have a quote from Mark Twain.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do. Always do right. This will gratify some people and astonish the rest.
That's great. And that, like you say, we can laugh at ourselves like that. And one of the things that makes it so good.
Yeah. Yeah, using humor to tell the truth to bring truth to, particularly to the powerful, you know. That's what the court jester's role was.
Right.
Good point.
Yeah.
And that is what parody served as. Parody also did that as a service, bringing out truth in a manner that's amenable to help people change.
Yeah.
Will Rogers did that, of course, in his time,
yes,
too.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We do have some comedians that are doing that today. Jon Stewart.
Good point.
Bill Maher.
He did Religulous. He made this movie Religulous, which I haven't seen, but it's supposed to be very good.
There's actually quite a few comedians that really are trying to make valid points couched in comedy. And
we're in a time, and this you can see this with the...
I don't think we have a Mark Twain, though, today, or Will Rogers. But
he is so revered.
Yeah.
We don't have a Beethoven. We don't have a Mozart. You can look at those things, too. But
yeah,
we're at a time when the light is being shined on a lot of things that need to be exposed now. And, you know, these comedians do that. It's one of the things. And there's a lot of documentaries that do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's one called The Cove.
I've heard of that.
I don't even want to watch it because it's so intense. It's about these dolphins just being slaughtered and how they... brought this to light with, they filmed it and they had to sneak in, and they say it's almost like a thriller where they sneak in because they would have been, you know.
The dolphins are so intelligent.
Oh, they're a special breed, like elephants.
Are almost out of time, and I want to give Caroline time to explain where today's quote came from.
Okay, I'm on a memoir quick kick, but I was looking for recipes in my grandmother's handwriting and so forth, which I have found, and. And in this book, there was in this box of books, there was a book of that my grandmother had of autographs of her friends in 1880.
Wow.
Okay, this was one of them, and I thought it was just perfect.
So, in these if you remember autograph books, you used to write little pithy sayings and then sign it. I remember in junior high, we all had these little autograph books that
we should be doing that, and we should have our friends write.
Well, we have Facebook now.
Right. Yeah, it's all changed. Everything changes.
I know, but
certain things remain the same.
Yeah,
maybe expressions of them change.
Yeah, yeah.
But autograph books from 1880.
Okay.
Okay. This is what this gal wrote. Dear Clara, may there be just enough clouds in your life to make a glorious sunset. Your friend Ruby.
That's beautiful. That's an enlightened outlook.
That is, and that's a great way to end Writers' Voices. Stay tuned if you're listening on Friday for Planet Earth's Wild, and if you're listening on Monday morning, have a great week, and we'll see you next week. And Bruce, thank you
so
much.
Yes, thank you so much.
I'm honored.
For being here
honored
today and saving our show.
I'm honored.
Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.